The spirit of performance is what defines Acura. And now, it's electric. Introducing the ZDX, Acura's most powerful SUV yet. Crafted using the same formula that brought them electrified supercars and multiple IMSA championships, the ZDX has track-tested performance that packs an energy all its own. Unlock the energy and order yours at Acura.com.
This episode of the Bears Talk Underground is brought to you by Sports Drink, your digital water cooler. Sports Drink is a newly created internet community that tries to find the intersection of sports and not sports. They're here to help us grow and to hate your favorite team. A rising tide lifts all boats, so go check them out online or in social. Go to sportsdrink.org or open Instagram and type in Sports Drink, spelled like sports drink but without the vowels. So S-P-R-T-S-D-R-N-K. All we ask is that you close the door behind you. We're trying not to let out the funk. What's up, guys? Our fourth and final stop through the AFC East takes us to Western New York, Buffalo, and talking about the defending AFC East champion, Buffalo Bills, who the last time we saw them were one half of probably one of the best football games I've seen of all time. You know, it's definitely one of those all-timers for sure, not just like in the last 10 years or whatever. It's one of the best games that's ever been played. We talk extensively with that with our new friend Dave Myers from Built in Buffalo, and, you know, we cover quite a bit talking about the team, and we really just got off on a roll there towards the end. It's one of the longer, I think it's the longest interview we've done so far out of the seven that we've done so far. So it's a mouthful for sure. But before we get to that, I have a special announcement that I want to make about how the show is going to go this season. Now, as you guys have known the last couple of years, what I've done is break the show up into basically like smaller pieces on let's say the Bears play on Sunday. On Monday, you'd have your Bear Up and Bear Down. And then Tuesday would be the full-blown review with, or the deep dive, as I like to call it, with knee-jerk reactions and the whole lot. Then we'd have Wednesday off, and then Thursday we'd talk to our guest about previewing the game. Friday would come back, do the keys to the game, things like that, you know, the deep dive preview, if you will. Well, we're going to keep all of that. However, from now on, or when the season starts, when we do the when the Bears play on Sunday, then Monday is going to be a full show once again. I'm going to do it all at once. I'm going to have knee-jerk reactions, going to have the deep dive review, and Bear Up and Bear Down will be the final segment for all my OGs who remember that's how the show used to go. Because I used to do two shows a week instead of four, and, you know, that was how the shows went. They were all in one. I would have my news and notes, and then I would have my interview, and then close it out with final thoughts before moving on to the game. So we're going to go back to that. However, that's going to be on Mondays is where you're going to be the review, knee-jerk reactions, Bear Up and Bear Down and everything, all on Monday. And then on Tuesday, something I want to try this year. We'll see how it goes. Maybe we'll stick with it. Maybe we'll go back to the old way next year. But Tuesday will be the NFL recap. I'm going to recap the entire week of the NFL and talk about the league. And then, you know, Thursday, I think, I haven't decided yet if Thursday will be the preview day, if we'll do the NFL on Thursday and then we'll do our preview on Friday, or if we'll do the interview with the guest and everything will be Thursday, and then the NFL preview will be Friday. Right now, that's kind of where I'm leaning towards. So we're going for a different format, but I want to envelop the whole league. Because to tell you the truth, one of the most fun things that I did last season was when I had Ross Jackson on the show just before training camp, and he and I basically did a deep dive on the entire league. We covered both conferences. We did a show for the AFC, a show for the NFC. We did 2.5 hours for each conference, previewing all 32 teams. And I just really had a lot of fun talking about something other than the Bears. So I thought maybe I would give that a try this year. Monday will be for the Bears. Tuesday will be for the league. And right now I'm deciding, like right now it's leaning towards Thursday is for the Bears. Friday is for the league. Preview everything else. And actually Thursday would probably, or Friday would probably be a good one to like, oh, and here's what went down on Thursday Night Football. And here's the rest of the league. Maybe I'll do some picks and things like that. So just keep your eyes on that. And for certain guys, I would love to hear what you think about that. You know, what you think of how it's going, especially when we get started, week one, week two. Let me know, does the NFL thing work for you? Does it not? You know, that kind of thing. Because, you know, there's no rules here. I could stop midseason if if it's not going well. But, you know, something I wanted to try, something I wanted to kind of get back into covering the whole league again, like I used to do back in the day when I had a show called Sports Talk Underground. We talked about the entire NFL, not just the Bears and things like that. So that's my little announcement for the future of the show going into 2022. So that's all we got for now. So why don't we go ahead and make way for our guest. It's Dave Myers from Built in Buffalo helping us preview the 2022 Buffalo Bills here on the Bears Talk Underground. So let's get to it. Hang up the telephone. I hear the dial tone ringing out loud. Our fourth and final stop through the AFC East takes us up to Buffalo and Buffalo, New York, and the defending AFC East champion Buffalo Bills. And here to help us preview the 2022 Bills from Built in Buffalo, our new friend Dave Myers. Dave, how are we doing?
I'm doing good, Larry. How are you, man? This is going to be awesome. When you messaged me, I was kind of taken back. I mean, I was absolutely thrilled to have to be able to do this because I don't get to talk to too many, besides the AFC East, obviously, but I don't get to talk to too many fans of other teams, especially, you know, NFC teams. So I'm really excited, and I'm thrilled to be here. So I think this is going to be fun.
Great. Well, you know, I like to reach out like during this time of year, this vast wasteland that is the off season between the draft and training camp. That's when I use this time to do our opponent previews. And I kind of do this as a way of introducing our opponents to our to my listeners, to Bear fans who probably don't know Buffalo aside from a few games they saw, including that amazing divisional game that I'm sure we'll talk about here in just a minute. But, you know, to kind of dig deeper to find out, you know, the nuts and bolts of the team from someone who loves their team like we love ours. So that's why I bring it because I could, you know, read this stuff in a magazine and, you know, go off of what I know and what I've learned on the internet and everything. Why not ask somebody who lives it every day like I live the Bears? So that's how I got to doing this. So I'm glad you can join us and help us out with the Bills, one of the more intriguing teams last year, you know, went on a crazy, crazy run. And we'll just jump right to the end because the schedule pretty much went the way that it should last year, except for that 9-6 loss to Jacksonville. That's the only one I can't reconcile. You know, that week one loss to the Steelers, it's like, yeah, that's when that happened.
There are some things that are too good to keep a secret. Like how your Amex Platinum card helps you have the perfect trip. I'd like to check into the Centurion Lounge. Or how it seems like you always get those hard-to-snag tables. Ooh, yum. And how you get the most out of select can't-miss events. With access to the Centurion Lounge, Resi Priority Notified, and Amex card member benefits at select events, you'll have to share. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
I want to tell you a story. It's a story about a scandal, broken relationships, gossip, rumors, money, corporate rivalry, and a broom. A performance-enhancing broom. My name is John Cullen. I'm a comedian, podcaster, and for 20 years, I was a semi-professional curler. And I want to tell you the story about how a single broom almost imploded the 500-year-old sport of curling.
We felt like we were bringing a knife to a gunfight.
It's the story of a superstar and his fall from grace.
Well, I was being dragged through the mud.
It's the story of two brother entrepreneurs with a dream.
Yeah, I said, that's great news.
It's a story of intrigue.
I still don't understand why we want to keep his name secret.
The full story has never been told, so I'm going to tell it. Broomgate, how a broom almost killed curling.
It was a year I'd like to forget.
To listen to Broomgate, search for Broomgate in your favorite podcast app. That's all one word, Broomgate.
I was like, okay, Now, is this how the season's going to go, or is this one of those week one flukes, and is the further we got away from it, it was one of those week one flukes because the Bills were who they were supposed to be and the Steelers ended up being who we all thought they would be. But aside from that, you know, the Buccaneers, the Patriots, and that crazy weather game, you know, and then the Jets week 18, okay, you're phoning it in and getting ready for the playoffs, that kind of thing, that makes sense. But that 9-6 loss to Jacksonville, what happened there?
I think that's just one of those games, and it's funny because on one of our live shows that we have on our YouTube channel, I was doing a schedule breakdown, you know, kind of doing content like it was right now. It was in between, you know, mini camp and training camp, and we were doing a schedule breakdown. You know, we were doing predictions and whatnot, all kinds of stuff. And for some reason, the Jacksonville game, and I even have the video evidence, the Jacksonville game stuck out to me as one of those, like, sore thumb games. I don't know if it was at the time when I made the prediction, if it was the unknown of Trevor Lawrence, Travis Etienne at the time before he got injured was, you know, was looking good. It was just one of those games that you're not supposed to lose, but you're not supposed to win. It was just one of those weird games. And then throughout the game, there was just a lot of things that were happening that wasn't typical Bills football. There was some in-game management things from Sean McDermott that I wasn't a fan of. There was some things that Josh Allen was doing that was very reminiscent of 2018, even a little bit of 2019, Josh, where he was forcing plays, and you could tell he was getting frustrated. He wasn't getting any help from anybody else on offense. They were dropping passes. There was no run game. Offensive line at that point hadn't started to gel yet. So it was just one of those games where there was no – you weren't getting any bounces. You weren't getting anything, you know, going the right way. They could have got a turnover a couple times, dropped interceptions, or there was a fumble that they could have easily recovered, but it went out of bounds. I mean, there's a lot of things that – any other time, the Bills and the Jaguars, the Bills get those 9 out of 10. And this game was just – and to hear about that game for so long after the game happened, because that game, ultimately, the Bills would have been 12-5 instead of 11-6, and they could have had going into the last week of the season, could have been playing for home field advantage, which I don't know if that makes the Bills-Chiefs game any different if it's in Buffalo. But that game did you know, put a lot on the rest of the season. And it was the next week they came out and, you know, I believe the next game, if I remember right, I believe the next game was it the Saints?
It was the Jets, 45-17.
Yeah, it was the Jets game where they came out and they just absolutely blew the doors off the Jets. And you can tell that was the one where Josh Allen was just completely, you know, done with hearing about the 9-6 and, This is this the Bills or who are the Bills? Because there's a lot of times throughout the season, and I don't mean to take this all like off the rails here, but there was a lot of times throughout the season last year where the Bills would have these games. You mentioned the Pittsburgh game, and it was like, okay, it's the first game of the season. They got to get things starting to gel. You know, there's some new moving parts on the offensive line, some new young players on the defensive line and the rotation. So I get that. But then there was games, you know, they beat Miami, they shut out Miami, they shut out Houston. Not great teams, but they still shut them out. And then there was times when they played good teams like the Colts and they just got ran over.
Yeah.
You talked about the Patriots game and the weather with the 55-mile-an-hour wind where the Patriots ran the ball 43 times and the Bills couldn't stop it. And that happened and everybody's talking about, oh, the Patriots are back. So there was some time throughout the season where it looked like things were spiraling, you know, in the wrong direction, but then they would go on a 2-3-game win streak. And then I think the actual team that we thought they were going to be was the team that showed up towards the end of the season. They put a nice win streak together. They absolutely blew out New England in the wild card game. They didn't punt once. And then that Chiefs game, probably one of the best games, unfortunately, that I've ever, you know, witnessed, 13 seconds away from going, and I believe they would have beat the Bengals in Buffalo. But
I do too.
So, I mean, yeah, so to bring it all around circle, the Jaguars game was one of those games where I think all teams that are good have that. It's just nothing goes right. Game plan's not great. Things don't bounce your way. You don't get turnovers. A few stupid penalties here and there that kind of cost you some opportunities on offense. So, I don't know. That's about it. A lot of us Bills fans have talked about that Jaguars game probably since it's happened. And it's one of those black eyes on the 2021 season.
Well, when I think about that game, it reminds me a lot of the 2018 matchup between the Bears and the Dolphins, where we were under the impression that the Bears were this kind of team. And then after, because of we're coming off a bye playing Miami in Miami, it's 171,000 degrees in Miami. It's fall in Chicago, so we're not dealing with that at all. You know, right. It's cooling down in Chicago. We're getting nice, brisk 60, maybe 70 degree weather at that point in October. We're coming off a 48-10 thrashing of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, who at the start of the 2018 season were the world's greatest offense. We held them to 10 points, and we almost put a 50-burger on them. Trubisky throws 6 touchdown passes in that game. So we think we're one team. We're on an ascent. We go down to Miami and lose to the Dolphins. And it was the weather. It was, you know, Nagy's inability to get this team ready to come off of a bye. It was, you know, in my opinion, those god-awful goddamn orange jerseys that we wear every once in a while. I think they're a cancer. I would burn them gladly, just like a good old-fashioned book burning. Just throw them in the middle, light them on fire, and I'll dance around like a crazy Indian. I hate those jerseys so much. And we never play well when we wear them, ever. So
that's funny because, and I don't mean to catch up, but that's funny because the Bills, when we wear the white jerseys and blue pants, we don't play well. And it's one of those things when the Bills social media team releases, you know, hey, Sunday, this is what we're wearing. And if it's the white and the blue, you should see Bills social media. It's like, no, please do something other than that. Blue on blue, blue jersey, white pants, all white, whatever. Just don't do that because we don't play well for whatever reason. It's just one of those things, I guess, like the orange jerseys for the Bears.
Yeah, I just hate the orange jerseys. And trust me, I'm not alone, but I'm also not leading the pack because my listeners love to tease me about the orange jerseys. yeah, you should see like my Facebook group. Whenever somebody gets a new jersey, somebody got a new Justin Fields jersey in orange. I'm like, burn it immediately. Oh. You wasted your money. So that's an eyesore. Funny. It looks absolutely awful. We're the Chicago Pumpkins, not the Chicago Bears. Get rid of that. So, but I mean, it kind of reminded me of that game where it's just like we were 4-1 or 3-1 going into that game. You know, we're coming off this huge win. The Dolphins are struggling to put anything together. And then Brock Osweiler, of all people, throws for 380 and 3 touchdowns on what ended up being the number one defense in the NFL that year. Yeah. It's just one of those games where you can throw out the records, throw out the rules. The rules don't apply to this game because everything that shouldn't have happened did, and the Bears ended up losing that game. So that's kind of what that Jacksonville game sounds like, also including the fact that, you know, Jacksonville is also about a mile or two away from the sun as well, so I'm sure that game was hotter than Buffalo was used to at that point in the year.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's funny because we play – the Bills typically will play the Dolphins. They've reversed it. The Bills used to play in Miami in the later part of the season in December, and they would have Miami come up to Buffalo in like September. So they've kind of flipped it to where the Bills are going down there to play Miami, you know, weeks like 1-4. And it's, you could just see Josh Allen is just, he's sweating gravy. It's like 1,000 degrees. They're all getting oxygen on the sidelines. They're just like drenched, like completely soaked through their uniforms.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's, and I've been down to Miami for a game in September, and it's disgusting. And the opposing team, the opposing team's bench is directly in the sunlight for most of the game.
Yeah,
it's absolutely insane.
Because my aunt and uncle were actually at that game in 2018, and they sat on the Baird sideline, and they were about 4 shades darker at the end of that game because they were under direct sunlight from 1 p.m. to 4 p.m., you know, when it was about 106 degrees outside that day. I mean, and as they say, it's not the heat, it's the humidity, and they'll kill you with the humidity in Florida. So it can be unbearable, trust me. So, I mean, let's talk about that divisional game. I mean, they come off an absolute drubbing of the Patriots. They don't punt. Josh Allen throws for 600 yards and 9 touchdowns, and they just absolutely run the Patriots off the field, which had to feel good, you know, considering the way that the Patriots kind of left the field after that Monday night game. I mean, you got your revenge in New England a few weeks later, but being able to do it in Buffalo, to do it the way you did it, 30-point margin, you know, sending the Patriots home like they didn't deserve to be there, had to feel pretty good.
I think that that was the current players, and I think, you know, we talk a lot, Bills fans talk a lot about Josh Allen and how he's a right fit for the city because it's a blue-collar city. A lot of the quarterbacks that have come through there don't have the certain, I don't want to say moxie because that term is used a lot, but he gets it. He gets what this team's been through. I mean, we didn't make the playoffs for 17 years.
Yeah.
And I think that what he did and a lot of the other players, what they were able to do, now it being New England made it that much better. They held in all of our animosity towards Tom Brady, the New England Patriots, just being the redheaded stepchild of the AFC East to Tom Brady for, you know, 18, 19 plus years. And it just all came out on the field. I mean, he could not do anything wrong.
Yeah.
The touchdown to Dawson Knox in the end zone, he was trying to throw the ball away. And a lot of the other stuff, the interception by Micah Hyde, that's probably one of the best interceptions, and I'm not being a homer, but that's probably one of the best interceptions I have ever seen, how he just turned on the ball and went and took it from Nelson Aguilar. That was absolutely insane. So it felt good. There was a lot of bragging about it. And of course, Patriots fans would always come back with the Super Bowl rings and we owned you for 18 years. It's okay. You guys, this was your Super Bowl and stuff like that. And that's fine. We'll own that. But it was nice. It was nice to see, especially since everybody, after they beat us in that win game, everybody in the media, everybody on social media was crowning the Patriots as being back as the AFC East, you know, ringleaders or the champs again. And then obviously we went down and took care of business a couple weeks later. But it was a good feeling. It was a really good feeling to, you know, the Bills have been to the playoffs for the last 5 years. And, you know, losing to the Chiefs the previous year in the AFC Championship game the way they did, they played miserably. But starting the playoffs that way, I think there was a lot of the Josh Allen haters, I think, were starting to realize, holy cow, this guy is on another level. He's doing things that quarterbacks shouldn't do, not just making pretty throws, not just throwing on the run, not just escaping the pocket, not just, you know, scrambling and you know, the design run plays and stuff like that. But he's doing things that quarterbacks typically his size are not supposed to do. So it was exciting. It was nice the week leading to the Chiefs, because the Chiefs have the Bills number, was intense. It was very, I don't want to say very anxious, but it was one of those, are we going to play like we did last year in the AFC Championship game? Or are we going to play like we did when we beat them in the regular season?
Right.
So, you know, it was nice. It was nice to, especially since it was the Patriots, because I don't know anybody other than Patriots fans that don't like watching the Patriots get beat. So,
yeah, I mean, it was, it was a return to Kansas City. You'd beat them on national TV 38-20 week number 5 earlier in the season. And, you know, here we go. We're back to Arrowhead, and, you know, it was one of the more exciting football games that I've ever seen. And it was a game where, you know, where you're running up your phone bill, texting everybody you know to make, hey, are you watching this? B, did you see that? You know, that kind of thing. And I'm a cord cutter, so I'm streaming, which means that I'm about 30 seconds behind anyone who's watching the game, like on cable or satellite or something like that, which meant that my buddy was literally spoiling the game for me, because text me, oh, my God, what an amazing catch. And I'd be like, what? They're still in the huddle. What are you talking about? And then, boom, that wide, you know, when they were at the end of the game and Allen hit that guy wide open in the back of the end zone for a touchdown on, like, fourth and forever. You know, I was like, geez, how did that happen? I mean, they literally just let him walk right by him, and he was wide open in the back of the end zone. Then the Tyreek Hill play, then, you know, coming back again and, you know, and all that kind of stuff. It was just an amazing back and forth. I mean, things like, this is why I love football, were the things that you're sending back and forth to your friends watching a game like this.
Yeah, when the Bills were down two scores, and I was, you know, we have a huge group chat with all the Bills and Buffalo guys, and, you know, the Bills were down, I think it was 26-15, and the Bills had just gotten the ball, and we were texting saying, if we don't do anything on this drive, this game is probably over. And literally, I put my phone down, walked in the kitchen to grab a beer, walked back to the TV, and it was Josh Allen had just hit Gabe Davis for a 75-yard touchdown. Mm-hmm. And I didn't even know what to say, because that type of stuff is not supposed to happen. Like, this is, you know what I mean? Like, that's one of those plays, like, when your team, at that point, the Bills weren't playing great. They were playing all right. They weren't playing great, and it was the Chiefs, and there was this whole aura about, oh, my gosh, it's the Chiefs, and, you know, they have our number and this and that. And that happened, and I was like, holy shit, we can do this. Like, it took him 13 seconds to put us back within a field goal. And then they got the ball back. They held the Chiefs, got the ball back, and then they took the lead, and I was like, oh, my God, what is happening? And then the Chiefs scored again, and then the Bills had that fourth and forever, and Gabe Davis runs just a simple seam route. Yep. And the guy, I don't know what happened to the defender. He fell down. He read the route wrong or whatever. And 13 seconds, and I looked at my wife's son, who is a huge Patrick Mahomes fan, which it breaks my heart, but because, you know, for whatever reason, he likes Patrick Mahomes. But I look at him, and I'm like, oh, dude, there's 13 seconds. I don't know. They can do it in 13 seconds. They just need a field goal. I don't know if they can do it. And I was like nervous. I'm like, they left too much time on the clock, but it was fourth down. They had no choice. Like, yeah. You know, so it was crazy. And over the 13 seconds it's been talked about in social media, Bills social media, people coming after the Bills because the Bills are widely ranked number one in all these power rankings, which I hate. I like when we're the underdogs, but the 13 seconds it's something that is hard to go back and watch.
Yeah.
It's extremely hard because as content creators, and you know, you have to sometimes watch games that are painful. Mm-hmm. You have to watch games and plays that are not fun. And that was definitely watching to try to explain to our fan base, you know, that might not know what the heck happened in 13 seconds, what was going on. It's hard. It's still hard to watch. And we're talking, it's been 4 months, 5 months. And it's one of those things. Hopefully they learn, they address, they adapt, and they move on, you know?
Yeah, I mean, it was, you know, an amazing back and forth. I was pulling for Buffalo. And, you know, it's unfortunate that the game went the way that it did, especially with the, you know, the overtime period and the, right. You know, the Chiefs taking, you know, basically deciding the Bills season on a coin toss because nobody was stopping anybody at that point in the game. The defenses were exhausted.
Right.
Nobody's got anything left in the tank. It was basically going to come down to the coin right. toss. And that was basically, you know, anybody who was in favor of the rule change, that was one of the things that they said was that at the end of the game, they got nothing left. I mean, especially in that game. It became a track meet there at the end right. with Tyreek Hill, you know, running up and down the field and all that kind of stuff. It's just like the defense just, I don't know what it is about defenses. They get so worn out probably because they're reacting instead of being the ones knowing what they're doing and kind of thing. Takes right. a little extra out of you and everything. But it's like, you know, those defenses don't have anything left. Kansas City went right down the field and scored that touchdown. And it was unfortunate the Bills weren't able yeah. to answer and see, you know, what would happen, especially in that ball game. They kept going back and forth. I mean, it was what everybody wanted to see, which was Allen and Mahomes deciding the fate of their football teams, just leading them down the field, right. up and down, you know, this shootout that we've all been dreaming about since these guys got drafted in 2017 and 2018, to, you know, for it to get to this point, to see these guys playing right. a game like this and go back and own it the way that they did. And in a lot of people's opinion, the game got cut short because Allen didn't get a chance to answer.
Yeah. Yeah, and you can, right after the coin toss, they followed Allen from center, you know, the middle of the field. They followed him all over the sideline with the camera. You could tell he was pissed off. He's like, we're not going to win because I'm not going to get the ball.
Yeah.
Because at that point, like you said, there was every possession each team was getting towards the end of the game, they were either getting a touchdown or a field goal. And it's unfortunate that it went the way it went, but we could have been – we as Bills fans have to remember, too, that we wouldn't have said anything if Allen got the ball, went right down the field and scored. We still probably would be saying it was the greatest game, you know, not just in playoff history, but potentially ever, because we would have been on the right side of it. So Josh Allen was very, I think, level-headed when they interviewed him after the game. Yes, he took a shot and said, I wish I would have got the ball, but he said, if I would have got the ball, we probably would have scored. And so you got to kind of take a look at it both ways. And it's funny, you know, that they changed the rule, and they're now – there's a running joke out there in a lot of the social media world that it's the Allen rule, because Josh Allen didn't get the ball. It's not, you know, any other name of the rule, but I think they got it right the way that they've formulated it to where at least each team gets the ball and gets a chance to score six. I mean, I think that's the way to do it. I don't think that the way they have it now or the way they had it before, they just changed it, was necessarily wrong. I'm probably a lot more upset about it because it happened to my team,
right?
Which I think if any NFL fan, it happened to their team, they'd be like, change the rules. This is terrible. Each team should have a chance. So I can see both sides of it. I'm glad they did change it, because I think it will make for more more exciting football, because they were throwing around stats that there hasn't been a ton of times where this has happened in the playoffs. There hasn't been a ton of games decided by, well, one team got the ball and the other team didn't, or one team got the ball, score, you know, didn't score, the other team got a field goal. There hasn't been a ton of these games. There's been a handful, you know, to talk about, but I think they got it right. There was a ton of stuff that was proposed out there. I know Brandon Bean had a scenario that he thought would work too, and a bunch of the other GMs out there. So I definitely think it'll make it more exciting. And then you mentioned, you know, finally being excited to see Mahomes and Allen. I think that going forward, I don't want it to be Tom Brady versus Peyton Manning, which is what everybody's trying to call it, the next Tom Brady versus Peyton Manning, because Peyton Manning wasn't on the right side of that, you know, head to head, if we're talking rings. So it's going to be fun. I think, you saw the embrace. I mean, Patrick Mahomes stopped celebrating to make sure he went to go find Josh. Everybody, I think, has seen that footage of him running through the crowd to go find him and embrace him. And then you could tell the camaraderie between those guys when they played in the match a few weeks ago against Tom Brady and Aaron Rodgers, that those guys are genuinely respectful of each other and care about each other. So it should be fun. The Bills play the Chiefs this year, so during the regular season. So we might get another preview of things to happen in the postseason.
And I was in favor of the rule change as well. And I think the NFL got it right when they only changed the playoffs. That
right.
The regular season overtime was left alone, and that this was just a caveat that was for the playoff games only. That's what I want. I didn't want the NFL to overhaul the, you know, across the board overtime system. I just wanted it to be the playoffs. These are, you know, never say die. There is no tomorrow football games. You know, we want to be sure, you know, in my opinion. And right. I think that, you know, giving the other team another possession, if the other team scores a touchdown, I think it, you know, will go a lot of way to knowing for sure that the right team won and, you know, that kind of thing, especially in a football game like that, where it's just like at the end of the game, they were just going up and down the field on each other, and the defense was on the field because they had to be, not because they wanted to be. I mean, they were worn to the bone at that point in the game, you know. So I think this that was the caveat, was that only doing it for the playoffs was the way to go.
And I think, too, and think about it this way, who knows how much longer that game would have went. If Allen got the ball, went down, scored, matched the touchdown, Chiefs might have come back down and scored. Allen gets the ball again. You know what I'm saying? Like, we don't know how long that game could have been, you know, how long that game could have been. So there's a lot of people that were saying that too, as they were trying to be, you know, opposing of the change was, well, what if the Bills scored and then the Chiefs scored again and then the Bills scored? Like, what are we doing? You know what I mean? And I get that argument, but God, that would have been exciting. Like, that would have been really.
To me, the answer is simple. It would have all depended on what the Chiefs did, because they didn't have to kick an extra point or go for two afterwards.
Yeah.
So if they score a touchdown and then they kick an extra point, we would have found out, because if the Buffalo Bills go all the way down the field, they're going to go for two. They're going to try to get this game over with. They're not going to look to tie it up and give the ball back to Kansas City. To hell with that.
Right.
You know, they're going to go for two.
Exactly.
So that's what would have happened. If the Bills score, then they're either tying it up because Kansas City went for two and got it, or Kansas City kicked the extra point and they're going for two to win it. So the only way it keeps going is if they keep tying each other. And I know that Buffalo probably would have did everything in their power to not give the ball back to Patrick Mahomes.
That was always
my argument with it when people would try to, well, what if the Bills scored? Then it would have depended on what the Chiefs did with that touchdown. Because them scoring the game, that was the end of it. They didn't have to kick an extra point or go for two or anything like that. So Buffalo gets the ball and they go down and score like pretty much everybody thinks they would have. Then it would have all come down to, you know, and I'm not a Bills fan, but I'm sure McDermott's going for two. He's going for two. Oh, yeah. He's getting the game over with. We're getting the hell out of here. We're either winning or we're losing one way or the other. The game ends now. And, you know,
I agree.
That's how we would have known what would happen. That's exactly what would have happened. So they're not going to play it safe and give the ball back to Mahomes. To hell with that. No way.
Right. So absolutely. I agree.
So we go into the off season. We get into the free agency period. And in a move I don't think a lot of people saw coming, Von Miller becomes a Buffalo Bill instead of sticking with the champs and you know, staying with the Rams and somehow helping the Rams add another $20 million a year player and still be under the cap at the same time. He goes to Buffalo and joins this team to try to help do what he did in L.A. with the Bills.
Yeah, it's funny because back at the trade deadline last year, there was some rumblings going around that the Bills were trying to get Von Miller at the deadline to try to make a run. And I don't know what the price tag was. And if you're a fan base or the Bears fans or yourself, you don't know too much about Brandon Bean. He's very stingy with draft picks or draft capital, as he likes to call it. He doesn't like to give them up unless it's an absolute sure thing. Or he's making out in it. He knows what the value of the draft pick is as opposed to the value of the player he'll be trading with. So that happened, and then we all had to watch him go and play alongside Aaron Donald, which was, to be honest, if you're a football fan, it's exciting. If you're not a fan of the Rams, it sucks, because those two guys together were absolutely dominant. They decided the game at the end of the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
Aaron Donald and Von Miller absolutely decided. Because if you go back and watch film on the last drive that the Bengals had the ball, the coverage was blown on the last play of the game, and the wide receivers were just running down the field because I believe that Sean McVay had that much faith. Now, I don't know how it was called, but if you go back and watch, the wide receivers are open. It's just that Joe Burrow had no time to do anything with the ball.
Right.
Because Von Miller was right there and Aaron Donald was there. You know, he didn't have any time to throw it. So I think trying to compare this move, which on the surface, when I saw the contract, I was like, he's not playing until he's 39. And then the details came out that basically it's a 3-year guaranteed $54 million contract. Okay, I can see Von Miller. He's in great shape. He can play until he's 36. But when the Bills acquired Stephon Diggs, I think he was that guy that put Josh Allen over the hump.
Sure.
There's the old, you know, conversation that's still being had by a lot of other fan bases out there, that who made who? Did Diggs make Josh? Did Josh make Diggs better? It doesn't matter to me. They're a good pair. You know, they work well with each other. So I think by getting Von Miller, he's a guy who's been in, he's won two Super Bowls. He absolutely closed out this Super Bowl. He's a closer that the Bills desperately need. They lost to the Chiefs in the AFC Championship game a couple seasons back because they couldn't get to Mahomes. Mahomes goes on to play the Buccaneers. He can't get a throw off the entire game because they chased him down, because they had the athletes to do that on defense, where the Bills just didn't. They have a great secondary, They have decent pass rushers, a decent line, decent linebackers, but they didn't have that guy in the big game situation that could close out games. And that's what they got with Von Miller. The contract, it is what it is. You know, if he comes in and he helps not just the defense performance-wise, but if he teaches these guys some things that are going to help them, you know, the Gregory Rousseau's, the Boogie Bashams, A.J. Epinesa's, Ed Oliver's, if he teaches these young guys, you know, work ethic and preparation and watching film and all this stuff, that's worth it right there. Because I think we're going to get, you know, the production from Von Miller on the field. I think we're absolutely – I don't know if you remember, but the Bills had a player in Lorenzo Alexander who was kind of bounced around the league. He played defensive tackle for a while. The Bills had him back in 2015, 2016. He retired after the 2017 season. The Bills basically just put him out there. He was considered a linebacker, but they just put him out there and said, go get the quarterback. He wasn't part of the defensive end rotation. So I think that's what you're going to get from Von Miller. He's technically listed as a linebacker, but he's also an edge rusher. So I think they're going to get him out there to show these guys, this is how you beat tackles. This is how you beat this. This is how you beat, you know, a zone run scheme. Plus he's good against the run. So I think that's going to help. And the Bills are super young up front. And I think he's going to help these guys for the next couple years. You know, we're going to find out how good these guys are because Von Miller is going to create such a command on the whatever side he decides to line up on that these other guys should be free to wreak havoc. And we're going to find out if all these first-round draft picks that we spent on the defensive line over the last 3 years are going to pan out. So I think it's a win. I mean, the contract is what it is. You know, Brandon Bean doesn't throw out huge contracts that often. I was sitting on my phone all day waiting for Chandler Jones to sign with the Bills, only to find out that he went to the Raiders,
right?
Which I don't know what he saw there that was more, you know, enticing to him than going to the Bills, because the Bills were in contact with him for 2 days. And it was apparently down to the Bills, I believe, another AFC team I'm not sure of, and the Raiders, and he ended up choosing the Raiders. So at the end of the day, I think we won out. I think we got the better pass rusher. We got a guy who's going to be amazing in that locker room. He's a great guy off the field. He had the pass rush summit, you know, a couple weeks ago, and all the Bills guys were there. So they're already learning, and he's already leading by example. So I'm excited.
Yeah, it's definitely one of those acquisitions that can that will get you ready for the upcoming season. You know, like if you weren't excited about it now, you have to have your motor checked after you sign one of the rare defensive Super Bowl MVPs that are out there. So it doesn't happen often. And when it does, that means that the guy absolutely took over the game. If a defensive player has won MVP, he took over the game. And that's what Miller did in Super Bowl 50 when they shut down Newton and the Panthers. And, you know, hopefully that's what he can help Buffalo do on their way to the Super Bowl. So the rest of your free agent signings, you got some interesting names on here. Roger Saffold, the guard from Tennessee, signed O.J. Howard away from the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Ryan Bates. Let's talk about Ryan Bates, because
yes, we
signed him to an offer sheet, and we thought that was as good as done because supposedly Buffalo didn't have the cap space to match it, and then sure enough, they match it, ruining Ryan Poles' plans to bring Ryan Bates in to be our new starting right guard.
Ryan Bates is like a unicorn. A lot of other fan bases don't know a lot about Ryan Bates other than watching him down the stretch last year and in the playoffs. He played really well. He's been on the team for 3 years.
Yeah.
He can play all five spots on the line, which, again, that's why I call him a unicorn, because he's played all five spots on the line at some point, either whether it be just a couple snaps, you know, to spill an injury or something. He can play center. He's actually not a bad center. I think that he's probably our best bet at backup center right now. But I was concerned that he wasn't coming back because it took the Bills forever to figure out that he was a really good guard. Like, he was a really good guard, and he, maybe it was because he was in the system for a while. I don't know, a lot of fans don't know, but offensive linemen, either when they're drafted or when they're on a new team that has different offensive schemes, it takes them a while to be able to understand, you know, the position, because there's a lot of different moving parts, right? Not every offense is the same. So there's a lot of things. You may have played left tackle in college, but in the pros, you might be a really good left guard, and vice versa. So it's, you know, he played some in 2018 or 2019. He played a little bit 2020, but it wasn't anything that was important snaps to where we relied on him. It was either a guy was out for a couple snaps for an injury, or it was the end of the season and the Bills were already in the playoffs, so he was getting the second half snaps at guard or tackle or wherever they decided to put him. But I was concerned he wasn't coming back, to be honest with you. It was taking forever, and there was a huge thing. It was signing Rick Bates was a hashtag on Twitter that was trending for a while, because people were like, oh my gosh, he's not coming back. Now we got to figure out what we're doing at right guard. We got Saffold. Are we going to move Saffold over to right guard? But he was a Pro Bowler at left guard with Tennessee, so what are we doing? But he's one of those guys that Sean McDermott loves, because he was here forever. He works hard. He's a lunch pail guy, you know, bring the lunch pail to work. He's faith-based. He's a guy who's always, you know, been in good shape. He's always good in the locker room. So when they gave him a 4-year deal, I was like, all right, I guess Ryan Bates is our, you know, future right guard for the next 4 years. And what's really irritating is that they're talking about seeing if he'll fit better at left guard and moving Saffold to right guard, which I don't know. It's one of those things that's going to drive me nuts. McDermott always waits till like the very last preseason game to figure out the offensive line, and it irritates the shit out of me every year.
Yeah, I mean, it was funny watching Bears Twitter during that whole episode where, you know, it became known that Ryan Bates was on Ryan Poles' radar, that the Bears were interested in him. And then when he signed an offer sheet, you think that we had just signed the second coming of Quentin Nelson or something, but the way that a lot of Bear fans just kind of freaked out about, oh, we signed him, we got him, you know, blah, blah, blah. Now it's, you know, Buffalo's got X amount of days to answer the offer sheet, and people are talking, you know, they don't have the cap space, they're going to have to let him go, blah, 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 blah. And then when he signed, or when Buffalo matched the offer, I should say, you know, it just like, what? I was excited that we signed him, but, you know, this isn't like the guy has played every snap of every game that he's ever been in his NFL career.
Right.
We're basically going on potential right now. We're getting him because he's cheap. He isn't going to be one of those guards like, what's his name, that Brandon Scherff signed him for $18 million a season down in Jacksonville. Right. This is not one of those guys. Right. You know, we're signing him, I think, $4, maybe $5 million a season at the most, and you know, that's who we're bringing in. We're bringing in a guy that's going to play to try to get one of those $18 million contracts. We're bringing him in because we can get him for $4, $5 million. If he was a $20 million a year guard, we're not even calling him right now. So, you know, the fact that people were celebrating in the streets when we signed him to the offer sheet and then being just devastated when Buffalo matched the offer, I was like, yeah, it sucks that we let him go, or that we didn't get him, I should say, but what did we really lose? You know, it's like, come on. We don't even know if going to be as good as he was in Buffalo, because he's not on the same team anymore. But, you know, it's like there's a lot of unknowns out there. I was excited, and I was upset when we lost them, but it wasn't the extreme one end of the other that I saw a lot of on Bears Twitter that week.
So I went back because Bill's Twitter was going crazy. We're going to lose Ryan Bates. We call him Rick Bates because that's what Josh Allen calls him. And I went back and watched, I think, the last three games of the season. He absolutely was working the defensive line against the Patriots. I mean, everything was working that game. So that's kind of hard to say, but he played well. Now The funny thing is if the Bills didn't match it for whatever reason, you know, the money, whatever it was, they decided it wasn't going to be the right deal. Obviously, Brandon Bean loves it because he gave a four-year deal. Our draft would be would have been completely different than what it was, which had me very nervous because Tre'Davious White is out for we don't know how long. He's coming back from the ACL, probably Thanksgiving. It looks like he's going to be back. So we need a cornerback, right? We need a running back. Oh, God, by the way, now we need a starting right guard. So, I mean, it alleviated a lot of the stress of what are we doing? We have, you know, a $258 million quarterback. We got to figure this out. So I'm glad it worked out.
Yeah.
But, yeah, you guys would have liked him. I mean, he's a mauler.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm telling you right now, he's a mauler. But he's not overwhelming, if that makes any sense. Yeah. He's not that guy who just, you watch the film and you're like, every other snap, you're like, holy shit, look at him pull on this play. You know, I mean, he has his moments where you're like, damn, he blew up that guy.
Yeah.
But, you know, but yeah, I didn't understand the huge, like, everybody was going gaga over him. Like, he needed to be our right guard or we would have no offensive line period type deal. So,
yeah,
I get you there.
Yeah, I mean, it was just, you know, funny watching Bears Twitter go back and forth like that. And it was like, yeah, it's great. We got him. We don't have him yet, so everybody needs to relax because Buffalo can still match. Oh, dude, they don't have the cap space. They're not going to be able to sign him. They're not going to be able to match it and blah, blah, blah. They'll have to cut somebody in order to keep him and blah, blah, blah. They're not going to do that and so on and so forth. And then they go ahead and match the offer. It's like, well, there it goes. And then, you know, it was like everybody's wearing black and mourning, and this is like, okay, everybody calm down. Like, you know, I liked what I saw. I liked what I heard about Ryan Bates. I feel like we're a lesser team because we don't have him, but it's not going to be the end of the world. So I just thought it was kind of entertaining what Bears Twitter put itself through that week.
Yeah,
so
you got to remember, too, though, us Bills fans, we're not used to having a competent front office, right? Not just a head coach, but a general manager. So I think a lot of us are like, he's going to do what's right for the team. If he signs them, he's going to sign them. If he doesn't sign them, he's not going to, and he's got plan B. Because he's built this team, he's done exactly everything he said he would. Brandon, we're talking about Brandon Bean. He's done everything that he said he was going to do when he got here in 2017. Said, I'm going to build through the draft. I'll sprinkle in free agents when I have the money. I'm going to fix this team's dead cap situation, and we're going to be contenders every year. And we're like, ah, yeah, we've heard that for 17 years, bro. Like, come on, tell us something else. And yeah, then, of course, they draft Josh Allen, and everybody's like, oh, my God, he took the wrong Josh. Like, are you sure you didn't mean Josh Rosen?
Yeah.
What? This guy's a project. No way. Here we go. Yeah, we're never going to make the playoffs, blah, blah, blah. And so it's just nice to have a competent GM who's, even when it looks bleak, like there's no salary cap anywhere to be had, he makes deals work. I don't know how he does it, because he doesn't kick the can so far down the road to where it's going to hurt us. Right. He's got outs and all these contracts. Same thing with Ryan Bates. There's an out in his contract after 2 years. So if things aren't working out or he regresses or he's just not the guy that we thought he was, there's an out clause. Same with Von Miller. We can void his contract after 3 years. So, nice. Yeah, it's nice to have somebody up front that are upstairs that's doing their homework and can put contracts together.
Yeah, I'm hoping we got one of those in Ryan Poles. I mean, he's got a pedigree coming from Kansas City. He's been there since 2008, so he's seen a lot. He's been through a lot. Not just under one guy either. He's been under three different general managers. So he's got a lot to learn from and a lot to pick and choose about who he wants to be when he gets his own team. So I'm hoping that we're looking at the beginning stages of that on our end as well. So, and
well, he came from a good one in Red Beach. Red Beach is a good guy. I mean, I don't know how he's made that work because they were in trouble last year. I don't know how they were able to do what they did. They released a bunch of guys in Kansas City. Then they signed a whole new offensive line. Apparently he was too stubborn, didn't want to pay Tyreek Hill. So we'll kind of see how it pans out. But, yeah, you guys have a good run. I think he's going to be successful.
Knock on wood about that. But speaking of the draft, you know, because of the Ryan Bates problem being solved, you go in not needing an interior offensive lineman. So with the first pick in the draft for you guys at 23, you do take the corner, Kair Elam from Florida. You do get a running back in the second round from Georgia, James Cook, and you know that's taking care of those issues right there. Is Singletary not working out for you guys, and that's why we're taking a running back in the second round, or are we just adding to what's already there?
So here's the thing, and I'm sure it was kind of a joke out there in free agency. The Bills tried to sign J.D. McKissic, right? He signed with the Bills. It was like a done deal. J.D. McKissic is that back that Brandon Bean wanted for this offense. They wanted a back that can catch the ball, line up in the slot if needed, was a good run blocker, was quick, and could obviously run the ball. He could run the ball. So they wanted a speed guy. He ended up going back to Washington for whatever reason. I don't know what happened. True story, a friend of mine said Brandon Bean's pissed off, now he's going to go sign somebody, and then you know a couple hours later he signs Vaughn Miller. But I think Singletary is a guy that we already know what he is. Okay. He's good in spate, right? His hands are all right. You know, he's not gonna kill you, you know, running routes and things like that. He's okay with screen passes. He's not a speedster. He can't take it to the house from anywhere on the field. He just can't. He's got a lot of wear and tear in his legs from college, which was one thing I was concerned about when he was drafted, was that he's been used a lot already. And I think what the Bills' philosophy is with running backs, draft, use, rinse, repeat. Draft, use, rinse, repeat. They're not going to go after, like there was all these rumblings that the Bills were in on CMC from the Panthers.
Yeah.
No, they're not. They probably called to see what it would take to get him, but I don't think it was a serious offer because Brandon Bean always calls. Plus, he's got ties to Carolina, all this stuff. But I think what they wanted in J.D. McKissic, they ultimately got in James Cook. Now, we got Zach Moss, who they drafted 2 years ago, who just hasn't really worked out. He's had injury issues. He's had some ball security issues. He's basically just become a thumper inside like the 5 yard line. That's not like a red zone inside the five, you know, first and goal, second and goal guy. He's had some drop issues. He's had some fumbling issues. They signed Duke Johnson, which I think was just something to kind of get back somebody who can catch pass catch in case the draft didn't work out and they weren't able to get one of the guys they wanted to fall in line, in the second round. But Singletary down the stretch was really good. The Bills went to more of a zone blocking scheme down the stretch, and he was able to produce really well down the stretch and in the postseason. I just don't think that they want him as a long-term answer. I think that they like to put an age bracket on how long they want to keep these guys for. I'm not saying they won't re-sign James Cook if he becomes the next Alvin Kamara, you know, because they will, because that would make sense. But
right.
And I think that they wanted a nice compliment to Singletary. You know, whichever guy's hot, let's get them going. And there was some rumblings last year that Sean McDermott and Brian Daboll, the offensive coordinator, kind of butted heads because Daboll is a passing offensive minded coach, and Sean McDermott's old school. I'm going to beat you up on defense, and I want to run the ball. Now. Daboll's like, no, I have really good wide receivers and an amazing quarterback that can kind of make things happen. So there was times when they ran the ball. It looks like they forced it last year, and it just wasn't working, so that ultimately they would go to five wide, it'd be over. So I think they're trying to do a little bit of both. Plus, we have a new offensive coordinator in Ken Dorsey, who was the quarterback's coach last year. We don't know what kind of offense he wants to run yet because we haven't seen anything in camp because we're not allowed to see that stuff anymore. You know, they're not allowed to do the one-on-ones and the five-on-fives and stuff until actual camp. So I think it's kind of a mystery as the plan unfolds here. But, you know, they were said to be in on a lot of the high-caliber running backs in the draft. So they went and they moved up to get Cooks. So they liked what they saw. And I think that he can be an asset in this offense, and it's going to be fun to watch.
All right. So Cook joins the backfield out of Georgia. You got Terrell Bernard in the third round, your other day two pick, a linebacker out of Baylor. Khalil Shakir, wide receiver from Boise State in the fifth round. And then you got Punt God, Matt Ariza from San Diego State in the sixth round, somebody that was being mocked to the Bears a lot because we ended up Pat O'Donnell, our punter, actually the rat bastard, signed with the Packers in free agency. Well, I mean, I don't think Poles was going to re-sign him anyway because who wants to pay a punter $3 or $4 million or whatever it was. But so I think that was always the plan, but Ariza was the guy that kept getting mocked to the Bears and he ends up going to Buffalo.
Yeah, and, you know, he doesn't like to be called Punt God. He made that clear, and then he goes out to training camp, and there's videos of him hitting one from the end zone, and it bounces at the 10-yard line. And I don't know how he does this, but he punts, and it's a spiral in the air. I don't know if I've ever seen that. So
really?
I honest to God, there's a viral video out there. We in fact shared it all over our social media. He punts it, and and I don't know if it was just this one specific punter. That's how he all come off his foot, but it was a perfect spiral. And the guy who was supposed to receive the punt on special teams, Marquez Stevenson, you can see him standing there watching it just fly over his head, and it's just like I don't know what to do with that. It's like I'm 30 yards away from where the ball is, so. I mean, we have a punter under contract. We have Matt Hack under contract, but he was horrible. He was one of the worst punters in the league last year, situationally, and just average punt distance. He was terrible. Plus, he's not that great of a holder. So we'll see what happens. You know, hopefully he'll get in there and he'll start kicking the crap out of the competition, no pun intended.
Yeah, I went to school, college, with a guy that ended up spending quite a bit of time in the league as a punter, Mike Cyphers.
Nice.
Yeah, he went to Western Illinois, ended up getting drafted by the Chargers and played there forever. From like 02, I think, until in like the early, like the mid. I mean, he was there like 12, 13 years. He was there for quite some time.
Yeah.
And watching him punt in college on a day-to-day basis was bananas. And like a punt that you just talked about, he had one like that his sophomore year, where he was in the back of the end zone and it landed 85 yards from where he kicked it and then rolled out the back of the end zone. And then one game in Southern Utah where I was, and I was the fortunate cameraman who got to follow the ball off that guy's foot.
Oh, nice.
You know, he had kicks like that. He was our kickoff guy. He was our long field goal guy, and he was the punter, and he was the only 1AA guy from – in contention for the Ray Guy Award in 02, his senior year. So, he was an amazing, amazing punter. So I know what it's like to be around that guy for him to be the one that's booming kicks all over the place. And I also know Cyphers, and he would have loved to be called Punt God. That would have been awesome for him. But I don't know why Ariza doesn't like it. I think that's an awesome nickname, but, I don't know what the deal is there. Cyphers would have loved it.
Just like bad juju. Like, I don't want to be called that because you're giving me like added pressure to be like the best punter in the history of ever. The video is just funny because the returner's just like at midfield, like where he should be, because this guy's probably going to punt 50, 55 yards, right? I mean, there's no rush. It's practicing against air, right? And he's just watching it like a center fielder watch a home run go over his head. He's just like, what am I supposed to do with that? Like,
yeah.
So we'll see. We hope it pans out because he was mocked to the Bills a lot too, but in like the fifth round. Mm-hmm. So for him to be the third punter picked, I think it's going to put a little fuel in the fire for him. You know, I don't know how much more fuel he can have. He's a punter. I mean, he's got to kick the ball far and directionally kick it to where he wants. So yeah. We'll see. It's going to be interesting.
Yeah. Cyphers wouldn't have taken it as bad juju. He would have taken his proper praise. I know this guy. Okay, he was a character, and a half in school, man. And when you're a punter, you kind of have to be, because there's not a lot to your day in practice. Yeah. You go out there, right? You take some snaps, you kick the ball a little bit, and then you're done. You know, you don't have to put in the work, and to get the respect of your teammates, you got to kick the hell out of the ball, and you got to be a clown. Yeah. And Cyphers was a clown. He was awesome to be around. Had a great time with him. After his senior season, he was still on campus. Just before the draft, we had our spring game at Western, and he and another one of the players were my color commentators for the game. And trust me when I tell you, that is an epic video that should go viral, because the three of us in that booth just acting a fool for the entire second half of the game. Because I invited different players into the booth to talk about, you know, guys that had graduated and stuff like that. And Cyphers and a guy that I played against in high school, RJ Luke, were the ones that came into the booth and, like, midway through the second quarter, stayed for the rest of the game. We were a team by the end of the game. It was awesome. But anyway, so let's look ahead to the schedule here. And it's an interesting schedule that the Bills have, especially with two national TV games right off the bat. You got Thursday Night Football. You're opening the season at the Rams. Could it be a Super Bowl preview? Is it what the Super Bowl should have been? You know, that kind of thing. Starting on Thursday Night Football to kick off the year, and then following that up with Monday Night Football at home against the Titans.
Yeah, to be honest with you, I don't mind the primetime games. I'm not a big fan of primetime games. I'm a big fan of 1 p.m. on Sunday games. That's
preaching to the choir, brother. Preaching to the choir.
So Bills Mafia, Bills fans, we were 1 p.m. Sunday team for so long.
Right.
That when we started to get good back in 2017, 2018, 2019, 2020, people were like, we need to be in six primetime games, and we need to be on Sunday night, Monday night, Thursday night. And I was like, nah, I'm cool with them playing at 1 o'clock, and look at the record that they have since Sean McDermott's been here at 1 o'clock. Sean McDermott's a creature of habit. Like, he's very... We do this Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. So, not to mention with the travel involved to the West Coast to start the season, I do kind of like the mini bye that we have, because then we go to Monday Night Football against the Titans, which is, we got 11 days off between games.
Yeah.
So I like that. I don't like opening the season, because the past couple years, the Bills have had some rust opening the season. I'm not saying that that's going to happen this year. But I don't want to come out and get completely waxed by the Super Bowl champions to open the season, and then have to dig out of an 0-1 hole on primetime. I just don't want to do that. Now, I'm confident that the Bills will learn from the mistakes that have happened starting the season the past couple of years. But we have to be realistic. They have a new offensive line coach. They have a new offensive coordinator, a new quarterback coach, a new DBs coach. So there's a lot of stuff, you know, a lot of moving parts up front on the defensive line. The offensive line has been kind of retooled. So there's going to be some time to work out some kinks. I just don't want to have to play the defending Super Bowl champions and then turn around and play on Monday night. I don't mind primetime games, because the Bills have fared okay in primetime games, but to open the season, it's tough.
Yeah.
You're playing the Super Bowl champions, right? A team that a lot of people are putting in top, five, top three in the power rankings, or number one, wherever you look. And then I'm not sure about where the Titans are really at. You know, they have Derrick Henry, Ryan Tannehill, I'm not completely 100% sold on. They don't have a great wide receiving core. Defense, they lost some pieces. But it's still Monday Night Football. It's traveling. You've come back now from the West Coast. Yes, you have a few extra days off. But it's like, I don't know. I'm a big fan of 1 p.m. on Sunday games. Amen. You know, that's what our coach likes to prepare for during the week, and that's just me, I guess, in a nutshell.
Yeah, I'm all for it. I mean, I love to see the Bears win, and I love to see them do well and win football games, but I absolutely hate the schedule that comes out the year after they have a successful season, because then it's filled with 3 o'clock starts and primetime games, and for me, it's noon noon when the Bears kick off here in the Central Time Zone. So it's the Bears at noon on Fox. I'm in. That's it. You know, I'm not wanting to wait till 7 o'clock on Sunday or, you know, have this 10-day break because they played on Thursday and all that nonsense. I don't want to have to sit through a Bearless Sunday because they're playing on Monday again. That guy. I want Sunday at noon. Sign me up. I'm in. So, you know, it's like the one added benefit of them not having a good season is that the majority of their schedule is Sunday at noon. Like, cool. I'm in. I don't want to see them play a bunch of late afternoon games or prime time or anything like that. I want noon on Sunday. So, I prefer that.
The 2020 season was a weird season because that was the COVID season. But a lot of the West Coast teams that the Bills played in Buffalo. The two of the West Coast teams, I should say, played in Buffalo at 1 o'clock. So 2020 was like 1 o'clock, 1 o'clock, 1 o'clock, 1 o'clock. And the Bills were just like stacking W's that year. And it was like, all right, let's just, I don't need primetime games.
Yeah.
I'm good.
Right.
I'm good with 1 o'clock, 1 o'clock. I know where they're going to be. The one thing I will say about the Thursday night game is I'm glad it's the first game and not throughout the season when they have a short week. So I'm glad that they got to play the Rams. They can obviously get out there early because there's nothing else going on before then. The last preseason game, since there's only three games now, there's like 2.5 weeks in between that and season. So I'd rather have a Thursday game to open the season than have one in the middle of the season to where you're playing on like 2 days or 3 days rest. So I will say I don't mind that, and then I don't mind the mini bye after playing on Monday night against the Titans, which is the home opener, so it's going to be already crazy.
Right. But the NFL wants to send Buffalo on the road pretty much every week for the first 6 weeks because you're at the Rams, home for the Titans, then at Miami, at Baltimore, home for the Steelers, and then at Kansas City, which is actually like a 4 o'clock game. As opposed to Sunday night football or Thursday night or Sunday night or anything like that before a week seven bye. So four out of the first six games are on the road and not the kindest places either. You got Miami in the sweltering early part of the season. You're at the world champs to start. You're at Baltimore. You're at Kansas City, places that you've won before, but also very hostile territory at the same time.
Yeah, and I'm not a big fan of the week seven bye. I don't like having 11 weeks after that.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, I'm not a big fan. On top of the fact that, I mean, maybe it will be a blessing in disguise talking about the schedule of games that they had to play two home games in the first 6 weeks. That's not a very favorable schedule. On top of the fact that you listed all those teams, how many of those teams are playoff teams from last year?
Right.
So, you know, it's going to be a tough start. They're going to have to get after it like from week one. They're going to have to be rolling on all cylinders or firing on all cylinders. There is a favorable patch. And what I do like about the schedule, and they've done it now for the Bills 2 years in a row, is that they're not playing any teams coming off their bye weeks, which is nice. Yeah. They don't have to worry about teams playing with an extra week of preparation. And last year they did that for the Bills as well. So I'm not saying it was done on purpose. But when I was dissecting the schedule, I noticed that, hey, we don't have teams that are coming off, you know, a bye and they get 2 weeks to prepare for the Bills. So I do like that. I'm not a big fan of having to travel to Kansas City early. I don't know why we can't play Kansas City in Buffalo. The last 3 years in a row during the regular season, we've had to play the Chiefs on the road. Why can't we just play them in Buffalo? That would be nice for once. I mean, I guess if we have the best record in the AFC, maybe we can play them in the playoffs in Buffalo. So
that'd be nice.
Either way. But yeah, the first part of the schedule is brutal up to the bye. And the week seven bye is early. I would have liked to have seen maybe week 9 or 10, cut it in half.
Sure.
So we'll see.
So following the bye, you have 3 out of 4 at home, starting with one of your favorites, another primetime game. This time playing host to the Packers on Sunday Night Football. Then you're at the Jets for your first meeting against them. They're home for the Vikings, home for the Browns. So those four games, that's a favorable patch. The Jets, the Vikings, the Browns, you know, rough start with the Packers, depending on if they can repeat the success they've had the last couple years out there, but no Davante Adams and some other changes they've made. We'll see. Knock on wood, they won't be that good for you guys or us this year, because I'd like to beat the goddamn Packers at least one more time before I die. So that would be nice. And but then there's a real interesting stretch. You have a short week to get ready for the Lions on Thanksgiving, but then you have a full week because you're playing on Thursday again at New England on December 1st. So you have those back-to-back Thursday games after you play on Thanksgiving against the Lions. So short week after the home game against the Browns, you're at Detroit for Thanksgiving, and then you get a full week to get ready for the Patriots before your mini bye playing the Jets week 14.
Yeah, I do like the first part you mentioned. Yes, the Packers are in there, but that is around the time frame when the Bills are looking to get Tre'Davious White back. So either right around the bye or after the bye, that's a favorable stretch, if you will. Mm-hmm. And then it gets weird. I think that if the Bills continue to be a Super Bowl contending team, we're going to be playing on Thanksgiving. They've won the last two times they played on Thanksgiving. They beat the Saints last year and the Cowboys a couple years ago. So I think that's a trend. I'm not saying anything against the Lions, but I'm not concerned about that game really at all, to be honest with you. There's a lot of stuff that's working with the Lions that they got to get through. The Jets are interesting. They had an amazing draft, but that's all on paper right now.
Right.
These guys need to come into the systems and execute. The Patriots, a little more concerned with, but then when you start to read, you know, between the tea leaves about what's going on with, they don't know who's calling plays on the offense right now. Belichick hasn't listed anybody as an offensive coordinator. I think Mac Jones can be a serviceable quarterback. I just don't think he's got the arm strength if they're going to need to get into a shootout with guys like Josh Allen or Patrick Mahomes. They didn't have that great of a draft, but what else is new? That's what the Patriots kind of do. They just kind of draft whoever they want, whether they're highly regarded or not. But yeah, that's that last stretch of the schedule. Hopefully we'll be firing on all cylinders, and that will be something that we can just kind of continue to roll on, because the last 2 years, that's what the Bills have done. 2020, they had that fluke Hail Mary play against the Cardinals. They didn't lose again until the AFC Championship game. Last year, you know, the stuff happened where they lost to the Jaguars. They won a couple games, and they lost. The Colts got beat really bad by the Colts. Jonathan Taylor had that 200-yard game, and he had four touchdowns. And then they just kind of – they didn't lose again until they lost to the Chiefs. So I think this team, as the season progresses, they start to get better down the stretch. Gabe Davis wasn't utilized a lot in the beginning of last season. They used him a lot more down the stretch because I feel like that was kind of – I don't want to say it was a plan, because anybody can say that it wasn't. It was just a coincidence. But he wasn't targeted a lot at all. In the beginning of the season, he was targeted twice as much in the second half of the season. We all know how he played against the Chiefs.
Yeah.
So, and I think it's all going to depend on how the team comes out of the gate. And if they're going to try to implement some running game with this, because then we can get the running backs and, you know, get them some consistency and continuity going down the stretch, and hopefully be able to have a good seed in the playoffs, if not the number one seed heading into the playoffs.
Right. And then the last four games, week 15, you're home for the Dolphins. Then you're at Chicago on Christmas Eve. That'll be fun. And then at the Bengals for Monday Night Football, week 17. And then you close out at home against the Patriots. And I think the NFL knew exactly what it was doing when they scheduled it that way. I think they're planning on that game meaning something. And as opposed to you guys phoning it in against the Jets like you did last year, you're going to have to suit up and play the Patriots to – you know, either you're playing for the crown or you're playing to keep them out, or at least that's what the NFL is hoping anyway.
Yeah, they've done that a lot in the last couple of years. Even when Brady was still there in 2019, the Bills played the Patriots down the stretch, and it was like, I think it was like week 14. And if the Bills would have won at the time, they were a game behind the Patriots for the AFC East. And if the Bills would have won, they would have been tied, but the Bills ended up losing. So the rest of the season, you know, it was what it was. But they tend to do that. And what's weird lately is they've been bunching the division games. And I'm not seeing it just with the Bills. They're doing it lot.
It's all over the league. I know exactly what you're talking about.
So so you play the Jets, and then you play the Dolphins and the Patriots, and you play the Jets again. And then you play the Patriots, and then you play the Dolphins. It's like they're bunching all those games, and they're just hoping that these divisions, because we see with the NFC East, that's been that way for 20 years, where they're hoping that down the stretch these teams need to fight it out. I'm fairly confident that the Miami Dolphins are going to be better than the New England Patriots this year. And I think that that is a team that's a bigger rival to the AFC East for the Bills than the Patriots or the Jets. I feel like they made a lot of nice moves. Yes, they have a new coach, but they have a really smart offensive-minded coach that can help Tua, plus they added Tyreek Hill, and they got a really good defense. So it's going to be interesting. I think in the AFC East, the last 2 years we've lost one game. Now things are going to be a little bit different, might be a little bit tighter, but the Bills have also gotten a lot better progressively the last 3 years. So it should be interesting. I think that I'm going to have you on our live show for that Bears game. I think we need to figure that out. We'll get you on the show, and we'll kind of, you know, hopefully both teams are at a good point, right? You know, and at that time of the year,
that'll be fun.
I think that would be a good time. We get a lot of interaction when we have opposing teams, content creators on our show. So I think that would be fun.
Yeah, absolutely. Last thing before I let you go, your thoughts on Kyle Brandt being the pseudo Buffalo Bills super fan that he's portrayed himself to be the last few years.
You know, I think it's good and bad because I liked I'm not used to the Bills being talked about the way that they have been, and it's kind of annoying because they're setting expectations for this team that since the world of social media has been around, I'm not used to.
Yeah.
Right? I'm not used to people saying that they're the best team in football. I'm not used to all these celebrities coming out of the freaking woodwork all of a sudden saying go Bills. And for a while there, I thought that it might have been an act for him. Like he would just pick a team 1 year that was good and he would kind of rock with it. Mm-hmm. But he's been doing it for 2+ years now. Yeah, so
he's leaning into it for sure. But he's a Chicago guy. He's actually a Bears fan. And I've actually had him on the show. And
oh, really?
He is as big a character on TV as he is in quote-unquote person, because I spoke to him over the phone. I had him on the show a couple years ago. But, he is a hilarious guy, and he did kind of latch on to you guys. And I think it was more of a superstitious thing, because you sound like a superstitious guy as well, because I know exactly how you're feeling. But it sounded like more of a superstitious thing, like he backed him, and they kept winning. So of course he's just going to keep backing him, and that's how it all went. Because now he's showing up on the big board and making these videos, these vignettes to show the crowd for big games and things like that. So he's really kind of leaning into the fact that he's latched onto the Bills, and Bill fans in general have latched onto him.
Yeah, he went to the Patriots game last year in the playoffs. He was at the wild card game, and he was there, and it was -10 degrees. So kudos to him.
Yeah.
And it's stuff like that. And it's like Mike Robinson on the NFL Network, who has been calling Bills Mafia his fan base since Josh Allen got good in 2020. and he's saying that they're going to win the Super Bowl. He said that the last two off seasons, and then again this year. And I think that these guys just gravitate towards, you know, where were you when we were defending Josh Allen in 2018, when everybody said that he was terrible because his completion percentage was 53%, where were you then? So this is why I think a lot of us diehard Bills fans are like very skeptical to like believe any of these media people when they talk about, you know, they think the Bills are the best team in football. Are they? Or are you just saying that because other people are saying that they're the best team in football? I know what I see.
Yeah,
I see a team that has come from not making the playoffs for 17 years to being really good.
Yeah.
And having a guy that I will ride with and watch do anything and not be concerned any given Sunday with Josh Allen. So I don't know. I like being the underdog. Call me superstitious. I like when people aren't talking about our team and then we just come up and we kind of punch you in the face.
Yeah.
Type deal. So that's my deal. So anyways.
No, I get it for sure. I mean, I was skeptical about all the love the Bears were getting going into the 2019 season. The only real detractor was Jason Lockenfora, who's got a hard on for the Bears for some reason. he does. Like, even when the Bears were great in 2018, it's like any second now, this is all going to fall apart. Yeah, well, we went 12-4. We won the division. Yeah. You know, we were a pretty goddamn good football team that year, and despite Jason Lockenfora picking against us every single week. So, I mean, he had the last laugh as far as 2019 goes because we were terrible in 2019 and have been the last couple of seasons. But going into the season, everyone's just like, there's no reason not to believe in the Bears this year. Yeah. They got everybody coming back. It's year two of Nagy, year two of Trubisky and his system, blah, 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 blah. They all look poised to do it. And it was just like, I know I've been saying this since last year, but hearing everybody else outside the Bears, you know, community talk about it, it did kind of make me nervous. It was like, yeah, you guys might be jinxing us. I don't know. So
yeah.
I know exactly how you feel. So
let me ask you this, and I know this isn't kind of one of your subjects for the show, but
go ahead.
Actually, it's a two-part question.
Yeah.
The first part, what are your thoughts on Mitch Trubisky? Do you think that he was given a fair shake with you guys? Because you would know more of the behind-the-scenes type stuff,
sure,
that the media stuff and the stuff that happens in practice that we don't hear about, and, you know, game preparation stuff and, you know, things like that. We just see what he does on the field.
Yeah.
And obviously he was Josh Allen's backup last year, and we absolutely loved having him because I think he was the best backup in the league, obviously, for, you know, to have a former starting quarterback who's got a winning record to be your backup. I think it was the right move. So what's your overall thoughts on the whole, how that whole situation went down with Trubisky?
It's funny because if you go back and you listen, I guess I was drinking the Nagy Kool-Aid to a degree because Mitch wasn't brilliant before Nagy got there. And then he had this season in 2018 where he was better at the end of the season than he was at the start, but he still wasn't making those tremendous strides where you're just like, oh my God, you know, this guy just emerged this year or anything like that. And then 2019, that first game of the year, we kicked off the 100th season on Thursday Night Football against the Packers. And it was just like, that was supposed to be the beginning of it there, was that we were going to, at home, you know, Thursday Night Football, we're kicking off the season. Our arch rivals were going to, you know, knock their dick in the dirt and just keep going from there. And that did not happen, you know, and we scored 3 points in that game. I mean, if I'd have told you that that your defense was going to sack Aaron Rodgers 5 times, keep him under 40 yards rushing, less than 200 yards total offense, and we were going to lose, would you believe that? Because that's what happened to us.
Yeah.
You know, we absolutely smothered Aaron Rodgers for 4 quarters and still lost the game 10-3. So, and it just like Mitch never got his mojo back from that game. I think that game went completely the opposite of what he thought it was, and he just never seemed to get it back. So it was a combination of that. And, you know, we know now, especially after what we just went through with what Nagy, you know, basically sacrificed Justin Fields to the football gods all season last year, was that we know Mitch wasn't the problem. You know, he wasn't helping, but it was more Nagy than it was Mitch. So it's a hindsight situation. Like, I'm sure there's more love for Mitch now than it was when we let him go, however you want to put it. You know, it was there slapping us right in the face during that preseason game, for sure, when he drove up and down the field and scored 5 touchdowns on us. It's like, it's like, but the thing was, you guys, Buffalo, did exactly what Nagy refused to do Mitch's entire career in Chicago, which was doing what he's actually good at, as opposed to trying to make him into this system quarterback that he wasn't made to be. You were doing the short passes, the three-step drop, boom, the ball's out right away, you know, cutting the field in half so he doesn't have to read the entire defense, and he just dinked and dunked his way right up and down the field, scored 5 touchdowns in the first half. And it's like, yeah, number one, it's a preseason, so relax. Number two, they're actually doing what he does best. And so, I mean, it's just like, okay, so obviously McDermott wants Mitch to succeed as opposed to making him succeed your way. That's what Nagy was. He wasn't so much interested in succeeding as he was succeeding his way. And that's why he's unemployed and we got a brand new head coach right now. So
it's interesting that what you say about trying to make him be the quarterback that he's not, because a lot of people have said that Josh Allen, and this is going to be my second question for you. A lot of people have said that they need, you know, trying to make Josh Allen into a pocket passer. And he'd be even more dynamic because of his arm talent. You know, he's worked on his mechanics. He's been working on that, you know, every offseason he goes out with, you know, Jordan Palmer and they work on his mechanics. He's worked on all the short stuff. He's worked on taking things that are given. He's been working on all that stuff, but you don't cage Josh Allen. It's not, you just can't, you got to let him. And it was evident in the second half of the Tampa Bay game, not knowing that he had a really bad bone bruise on his foot, because he was in a walking boot after the game, and he played like, I'm the only guy in this field right now in offense, and you're just gonna have to stop me. And the same against the Chiefs, mm-hmm. You could tell there was not designed run calls that were played, but you know what? I don't give a shit. It's gonna be a designed run because I see what I see. So my question to you is, what if, as an outside of the Buffalo market, an outsider's perspective, I guess not nationally, but what is the perspective on Josh Allen out there, you know, as far as how good or, you know, he is as a quarterback, as opposed to, he was good against Kansas City and New England, but what else has he done? Like, what is the national perception? We just see what they talk about on ESPN and the NFL Network. But actual fans like yourself that, you know, might not watch him on a weekly basis, but get to see some of him play. What is your perspective on his game and where he's at in his career?
Well, I think it's something that's grown over the years, because I think we were all very much in the same boat with the national media as far as, you know, maybe they did pick the wrong Josh those first couple years when he was struggling. And then, you know, he just kind of figured it out. You know what I mean? Like, it just, all of a sudden it was like an epiphany, and Josh Allen started becoming the guy that he had the potential to be. Because like you said, when he was drafted, it was looked upon, he was a project. He could throw the ball to the moon if he wanted to, but he couldn't hit the broadside of a barn if he tried when he was drafted. Right. But he had all of this talent. He practically carried Wyoming on his back when he was out there. And now he's doing that with Buffalo. And you're right. Caging him would be a mistake. Not letting him be who he is and everything. It's like you didn't sign the guy to a $40 million a year contract so you could turn him into something that he isn't. I think it would be a mistake. Now, I understand the impulse, because you want to keep him in the pocket, therefore not running around getting murdered by linebackers and safeties. Right. But, you know, it could be the detriment of your football team if you're trying to protect him. You know, you'd be hurting him by protecting him, kind of thing. So with the things that we've seen Josh Allen do, what you've seen, you know, highlights and you know, packages and playoff games and whatnot, it's like, you know, why does he have a $40 million contract? Because he's worth it. He absolutely is. He's earned the contract that he's been given, and you know, he's definitely one of the elite for sure in the NFL.
Awesome. So, I appreciate that, because we kind of box ourselves in, and I'm sure you're familiar with being a content creator, and you probably have a circle of people that you know you get information from and stuff like that. Everybody here thinks that he's the second coming of God, because we've been waiting since Jim Kelly to have this guy. We don't know what to do with ourselves. So when we see these things happen, there's a lot of times that Chiefs game in the divisional round, that was something that we've never seen. A lot of the new generation Bills fans have never seen that before from their quarterback. And it's nice to know that there's people out there that are going to give you honest feedback about him, because in 2018, there were some times when it was like, oh gosh, this is not looking too good. And then there was plays when you're like, oh shit, how did he complete that? So, which I'm sure you've seen in Justin Fields, where there's some plays, yeah. I'm sure where you've seen where you're like, wow, what the heck happened there? And then there's plays you're like, okay, he's the guy, yeah. You know, type thing.
Well, yeah, I mean, anyways, those would be the, you know, like the Cleveland game where Nagy basically threw him to the wolves and got him sacked 9 times, gave him an empty offensive line, or, you know, just 5 guys defending against Clowney and Myles Garrett, and, you know, got sacked 5 times in the first half, made zero adjustments, got sacked 4 more times in the second half. And I think I actually got that backwards. 4 times in the first half, 5 in the second. 0 adjustments and nearly got him killed. It's like, it's a wonder he showed up to work on Monday. What the hell are you doing? You know, because on Monday, everybody, not just Bear fans, everybody, like all the talking heads on all the shows, Nagy needs to be fired. He's absolutely going to ruin this kid. What the hell was he doing yesterday? And that was the entire season. And then you have that moment like he had in the 49ers game. It's 4th and 1. He's, you know, trying to do like a scramble. He runs into a wall of defenders on one side, reverses field, goes all the way back to the other side, runs it in for a touchdown. You know, to see plays like that. That touchdown pass he threw in the Monday night game on against Pittsburgh that gave the Bears the lead late in the game. You know, running to his left, throwing in, you know, pinpoint accuracy to Mooney in the back of the end zone. I mean, that's the kind of stuff where it's like, okay, we got something on our hands here, which is why we're all salivating over the fact that, A, Nagy's gone, and then, B, Getsy, our new offensive coordinator from Green Bay, is talking about we're going to build our offense around the quarterback, we're going to do what he does best, and, you know, give him the best position, put him in the best position to succeed, as opposed to, like, okay, here's our rigid little system, and we're going to squeeze him in it, whether he wants to or not. So, so that's why we're all excited about what could be coming this year with those guys.
Well, hopefully, I mean, I think he's a tremendous talent. I think that if you just put, you know, it took the Bills, they had to get the right guys around him. They got to surround him with these quarterbacks coming out nowadays. It's a different breed, all of them. Yeah. They're all, you know what I'm saying? They're all big guys, or they're all extremely, extremely athletic. And you can't just not give them the proper tools, because once they gave, you know, Josh Allen Diggs, and the season before even, he had John Brown and Cole Beasley. I mean, you got to give these guys, you know, talent. You can't expect to have what would be a number two on another team as your number one. No knock against Putin, because I think he might be a number one receiver, but you got disgruntled wide receivers sitting out there like DK Metcalf. I thought for sure you guys would make a move in the offseason to get somebody like him. Give him that weapon, then now you got 2 really good receivers, and now he's got options. But I can go on and on for days about that.
Right. I mean, I think we're an offseason away from the Bears making those kind of moves, because we got like $110 million in cap space next year. So going out and getting somebody like a DK Metcalf, and hopefully the Seahawks will let him be, and hopefully they won't trade him so that he'll hit the market next year. Because I think that that the Bears would salivate over getting a guy like that, and they'd have the money to go get him too. So,
Dave,
this has been a blast, man. Thanks so much for coming on. It's going to be a while before we get a chance to talk again, because we're not playing until Christmas Eve. But I look forward to having you back on. I look forward to being on your show. Where can we keep up with you in the meantime?
Well, I'm the co-founder of Built in Buffalo. We are all over social media. We're on Facebook. We actually just hit 50,000 followers on Facebook. Wow. You can just search Built in Buffalo if you're a Bills fan. Instagram, it's just Built in Buffalo _. Twitter is Built in Buffalo _. My handle is Dave Myers, B-I-B, on Twitter. We're on YouTube. We're even on TikTok. I don't know how to do it. We have a younger guy that does that for us.
Either.
And I look forward. We'll probably chat up throughout the season. You know, we've connected here now. So,
for sure.
You know, follow each other. So, but yeah, check us out. If you're a Bills fan, check us out. We're a digital media brand, and we're getting bigger. We're one of the last of the game, but we're growing.
Nice. Well, Dave, thanks so much for coming back, or for coming on to the show. We look forward to talking to you again real soon.
All right. I appreciate it, Larry. Have a good one.
want to thank our guest Dave Myers from Built in Buffalo. It's going to be a while before we talk to him again, over 6 months, actually, because Bears-Bills, I believe, is Christmas Eve, the 24th, week 16, something like that. And, you know, so it's going to be a while before we get a chance to have another chat with him. And I think we got our fill for sure with all the time that we filled talking to one another. So it's going to be a good time having him back. And for sure we'll know. You know, is this going to be an important game for both teams? Does Buffalo need to win because they're trying to hold court and, you know, make sure that everything goes through Buffalo in the AFC? Are the Bears doing anything at this point? Or are we, you know, looking forward to 2023 playing young guys and seeing what we got in the cupboard as we go forward into a very important offseason in 2023 with cap space and draft picks and things like that? So, be interested to talk to Dave at that point when the season's basically wrapping up to see where both these teams are and how it's all gone. So I look forward to that conversation. So with that, we close the book on the AFC East, and now we move on to the NFC East. And first up, the last place finisher, the New York Giants. And our returning guest, Ryan Dunleavy from the New York Post, was kind enough to come back and talk to us. We will cover everything with the Giants, the fact that they didn't look like they were going to fire Joe Judge, and then they did, and went all in on a GM and you know, head coaching search, and hiring Brian Daboll, who was a favorite of a lot of Bear fans after what he did with Josh Allen. Would love to see what he could have done with Justin Fields. Didn't work out that way, but he got his shot to be a head guy with the Giants, and you know, Daniel Jones and everything that they have going on. And, you know, thanks to the Justin Fields trade, they got two top 10 picks out of it. The number five pick being their own, and our pick would have been number seven. And they got two studs in those two spots, Thibodeau and Evan Neal, the tackle from Alabama. So you're welcome, New York. But, you know, it's going to be fun. We'll get into the NFC East, start with the Giants, and we move on to the Commanders. Then we'll have the Eagles and the Cowboys before we move on to the NFC North and start to wrap things up. So be sure to come back next Tuesday for myself with Ryan Dunleavy previewing the New York Giants. And until then, my name is Larry D, and this has been the Bears Talk Underground.